The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, just how did a real-life British geography student become an all-time great bank robber where he robbed the rich to help the poor until his ambition got the better of him? Well, to tell us more about this individual is the author of a new book called The Unusual Suspect. Ben Machel, you're very welcome to the programme.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Now, it's a very interesting story, all the more bizarre because it's not a novel, it's the truth. Tell me about this young man and what kind of a background he had, which might point us in the direction of understanding why he did what he did.
So it's the true story, as you say, of a young man called Stephen Jackley. And in the run-up to the financial crisis, he becomes obsessed with Robin Hood. He develops this fixation with the idea of robbing from the rich to give to the poor. And that's eventually what he does. You know, he becomes a bank robber. He reinvents himself as a criminal. And he steals from the rich and he gives to the poor. He gives cash to the homeless. But he also develops this plan to, I suppose, really change the world by setting up a kind of NGO-type foundation with all the money that he steals, or at least that he hopes to steal.
Yeah. There's something in his background which you think points him in this direction. His mother and father met in unusual circumstances, and he had, shall we say, a disrupted childhood.
Yeah. So one of the things which I try and draw out in the book is really trying to understand how someone from a very socially isolated background, really quite a timid person, can sort of arrive at this point where they think that, you know, the thing to do, the thing that they are compelled to do, is become a bank robber. Now, there are a number of things going on in Stephen Jackley's life. You know, his mother was schizophrenic. His father, I think, suffered from manic depression. And what nobody really realised about Stephen until he'd been captured and spent some time in jail, a couple of years, in fact, was that he was on the autism spectrum. He has Asperger's syndrome. So there are quite a few things going on internally within Stephen, which kind of helped, I suppose, drive him to this point. But then there were also external things, the world around him, the state of the planet, that contributed as well.
Now, this book was written with the cooperation of Stephen. And, you know, sometimes writers can exploit a subject and then, you know, after the book is published, the subject will not even converse or have any kind of relationship with the writer because they feel they have been betrayed in some way. This is not the case in your book.
Well, I hope not. I mean, you know, it would have been really hard to write the book had Stephen, I suppose, not been willing to really just give up so much of his time and kind of revisiting and almost kind of himself trying to get his head around so much of what happened and what he did and why he did. You know, but I didn't just write it with his cooperation. You know, part of my desire to get it all down was speaking to the people who were, I suppose, the victims of his crimes, the people who found themselves, you know, faced with a guy in a balaclava and a replica pistol and a knife, or speaking to the detectives in the UK who were kind of trying to investigate what was happening and who was behind it, or, you know, even as the story progresses, you know, federal agents in the United States. So, yes, it was, you know, more than enlightening spending so much time really with Stephen, but also speaking to other people as well was a big part of the story.
Now, his journal as a child was filled with science, philosophy, poetry. He certainly does not fit the profile of a robber in any shape or form. And at one point, he spent time in a Buddhist retreat in France and had a discussion with one of the monks about the ethics of doing wrong in order to achieve good.
Yeah, I mean, and this is, as you dig into the story, this is one of the kind of really interesting things is that, as you say, you know, his interests really from a young age are kind of esoteric. You know, he's really, really intelligent. He's fixated with astrophysics and space-time and, you know, big, big subjects. You know, he writes, you know, pages and pages of poetry. I mean, really just to himself. You know, he's obsessed with nature and the environment and all these things, which, again, you don't necessarily associate with somebody who wants to rob banks. And Buddhism, as he gets older, becomes one of his interests, and he becomes really fixated with the idea that, you know, reality, as we see it, is kind of created in your mind, and that if you're able to kind of sort of change your perception, then you can change reality. And in a way, that's exactly what he does. I mean, he creates a reality in which he is a Robin Hood figure, a wanted man on the run.
Now, how successful were his robberies? I mean, there's a, I don't know whether you've ever heard that comedy clip from Kenneth Williams where he makes a total hames of trying to rob a bank, and eventually the guy gives him the money. He's so sorry for him as a robber. How effective a robber was Stephen?
I mean, it's a really good question, and there's a couple of different ways of looking at it. I mean, on his own terms, he was not a success, because he was fixated with really hitting the jackpot. You know, he wanted to get into a bank, force his way into to what he imagined the vault or the safe, you know, and fill his bags with, you know, enough cash that he could go clean, you know, set up this kind of charity, set up this NGO, and start changing the world with, you know, building hospitals in Southeast Asia and setting up scholarships for underprivileged children. In reality, what happened was, on the occasions he was able to actually get some money from a bank, it tended to be, you know, hundreds of, you know, thousands of pounds from a teller or a cashier, but it was never the kind of the big score that he dreamed of. In one sense, he was really successful in that he consistently managed to get away. You know, he's managed to escape from the teams of police who were pursuing him, and, you know, in advance he would plan and plant, you know, changes of clothes in nearby woodlands, or in a leisure centre, he'd have another change of clothes. So he'd be constantly kind of going from one point to another, changing his appearance, you know, evading the detectives who are after him. He creates a fake bomb out of like a cola bottles and tinfoil, which, you know, he admits it just looked ridiculous. But he thought, you know, maybe if I'm being chased, I can throw it up behind me and that'll distract them for a few seconds. And weirdly enough, that's exactly what happens. That the police think, oh my gosh, the guy's made a bomb, and they start to evacuate Exeter city center, and he makes a getaway. And it's only when the bomb disposal guys get there, they kind of realize, hang on, this is just some Coke bottles filled with milk and wrapped in tinfoil. So there was an element of him kind of, there's tragicomic aspects to what he does, but he does keep getting away. You know, that he certainly had some, I suppose, skill and weirdly kind of a rational approach to that aspect of his crimes.
He broke into the office above an HSBC branch in Worcester and trashed the place when he couldn't make it down to where the cash was, only to realise later that what he had trashed was not HSBC, but a branch of the NSPCC, the Cruelty to Children People, and he felt terribly guilty about that. It gives us an idea of the shambolic nature of it. How was he caught in the end?
Well, as he gets deeper and deeper into this really kind of fantasy world that he's created, you have to bear in mind he's leading this double life, because, you know, he's doing a geography degree at university, and then during the holidays he's back in his sort of small council house in coastal Devon. But he gets deeper and deeper into this fantasy and into really this identity that he creates for himself. It gives him, you know, a lot of, I suppose, increasingly self-esteem, and it gives his life a degree of meaning that perhaps he didn't have before. And he realizes that what he really needs to hit the jackpot, as it were, is a real gun. You know, he's using replicas, he's using kind of, you know, BB guns and stuff. But eventually, after a couple of misadventures, he travels to the United States. He thinks the best place to get a gun is in Vermont. And so he travels there with the intention of using a fake ID to get a gun. And then, unfortunately for him, it doesn't go to plan, and he gets captured.
And of course, they presume, because he wrote in the plural, we, that there were more than himself involved in all of these things, could be a terror cell. He was not treated well by the authorities there.
Yeah, I mean, again, just to get an insight into how his mind works, you know, he brought with him all his diaries in which he kind of described in fine detail the crimes he committed, the crimes he hoped to do, what he wanted to do with the money that he'd stolen. You know, he didn't really kind of occur to him that this might not be a great idea if you're going to go on some kind of criminal escapade to sort of carry essentially kind of pages and pages of confessions with him. So when the US authorities found his diaries, it took them a while to kind of think, hang on a second, like, who is this guy? And yeah, as you say, they explored all kinds of possibilities. Stephen would often write to himself. He would often, as you say, use the word we to describe himself. So straight away, people think, well, there's more than one of him. You know, it can't just be him. You know, what's going on? So I think all kinds of possibilities, you know, that he could be part of an anarchist cell or something like that were explored. And only eventually the strange truth kind of became clear.
Well, it's a ripping yarn in every sense of the word. It's all true. It's called The Unusual Suspect, How to Rob a Bank and, in brackets, Nearly Get Away with It. It's published by Canongate, and its author, Ben Michel, thank you very much for joining us on our programme today.